Oh, hey everyone. Welcome back to Fat Public Access. I'm your host, Bennett Williamson. I've been your host all week. I think this is going to be the last public access event that we're going to be streaming. We'll stream the closing party tomorrow night at Saturday night here at iBeam. But for those of that have been watching and enjoying our sort of alternative AV content stream this week, thanks for watching. All this stuff will be archived at gold.fat.com and somewhere on the Fat website, so you can catch up on anything that you missed, along with the two panel discussions that we had earlier this week, the big boy panel discussions, as I like to call them. Those were probably in like 16:9 HD video, but we're keeping it solidly 4:3, top of the line, like 8 years ago video cameras.
That's perfect.
So yeah, I'd like to introduce our last guest, a good friend of mine that I've known for many years now, Andrew Bacone of the Reanimation Library. Thanks for being here, Andrew.
Thanks so much, Bennett.
Let's cut right to the content. Let me get the stuff going.
All right,
Andrew. Come on, baby. Come on. Change the projector. Do it for me. You gotta believe.
Oh, look at that.
There we go.
There you go. Nice.
Where's my beer? Oh, it's over here.
Cheers.
Cheers. It's kind of a lazy Friday afternoon here, folks.
It's spring.
Yeah, everyone in New York is excited.
Yeah, it's been brutal.
I mean, hell, I'm excited. I've been here for like 5 days, and I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's super nice. Today definitely felt like things were starting to go a little crazy out there.
I just read that like sun actually affects like your hormones. Like sun generates like estrogen and testosterone.
Right,
and
like seasonal affective disorder, right?
Well,
sad.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, people get those special sun lamps.
Yo, we had a tech talk show last night on public access with the tech director here, Marco, who's from Finland. And he said in Finland, they have inner ear inserts that emit like a light on your inner ear for like the same thing.
Wow.
So you can just wear your sad light like in your ear.
Is everyone happy?
Yeah, it works.
That's great.
I don't want to recap our whole last talk from last night, but like, you know, Nokia's from Finland too.
Uh-huh,
like,
yeah.
And he was like, yeah, part of the reason they say cell phones are like popular in Finland is because it's like cold winters. You need someone to talk to not go crazy. You need that happy light in your ear.
Right.
So anyways, obviously, it's been a stimulating week of programming, and I brought Andrew in here to talk about the Reanimation Library, which has been going on for how long now?
That's always actually a little tricky to say. I started collecting in 2001, took a year before that collection, before I had the idea to turn that into a library, so that was 2002, and then into a publicly accessible library, and then it wasn't until 2006 that it moved into a publicly accessible space. So the idea has been in development for, you know, 11 years, but it's been housed and available to the public since 2006.
What's the elevator pitch on the Reanimation Library? Because probably not everyone watching is familiar.
Right. So basically, a collection of books that most people would consider to be outdated that I collect for the visual graphic material. That's the most basic. When I talk about visual material, I'm actually more interested in things of like kind of a diagrammatic nature. I don't collect art books. I don't collect books that are explicitly about visual information. I collect books like you'll see in a lot of these images where that seems to be important but somewhat incidental. So and a lot of the books then are therefore they're discarded primarily on the premise that their textual information is out of date. So reanimation for me is a way to bring those books back, highlight the visual material, and demonstrate that the books, in my opinion, still have like enduring value.
And you first started picking up these kinds of books when you were in library school or?
I've been working at a library for a number of years in St. Paul, and I've been making a lot of visual artwork based on visual material that I was finding in that collection. But it wasn't actually that interesting of a collection from a visual standpoint. So I came, it was sort of like this random experience of coming across a particular book at a thrift store and being blown away by its images and sort of having a light bulb go off in my head, like, I should just start building my own collection, you know. There's obviously other books like this out there that are very compelling, very interesting from a visual perspective, that are, you know, really a dime a dozen. They're cheap and they're interesting, and so why not start collecting them? Which is what I did, and then.
Well, but it's—I mean, you know—you make it sound like a simple decision, and in retrospect, certainly it is. But like, to look at it one way, that's sort of when you decided, like, I'm not just going to make this thing or have this collection for myself. You decided to turn it into like a service, well, a project, but then also sort of a service or a tool.
Yeah, well, I think what happened, and you know, it took a year to sort of figure that out, was that, and really, so that, to an extent, you're correct, because I think what happened was when I was deciding to go to library school was when a number of these ideas were coming together, and so when I had the idea to turn it into a publicly accessible collection, that was right at that time. And, you know, my thought was that, and in fact, I already knew that other people were interested in the collection because I was showing it to friends of mine. But I just suspected that lots and lots of people would be interested in it, and that inevitably they would approach it in different directions and from different ways than I would. And so therefore, it would just become a much richer, more dynamic resource if I turned it into that.
I suppose as a librarian, you're probably already on board with the, like, hey, giving people access to things, like, is good.
Well, right. I mean, you know, libraries are generative spaces, and I think that that was just sort of like, I mean, my mom's a librarian. Like, I think I grew up around that idea, and so it just kind of made sense. It, you know, I mean, the collection was probably 50 books at the time, but, you know, if you're thinking of it from the standpoint of images, you know, there was probably already tens of thousands of images, and it just felt like, okay, this could just get bigger and bigger, and people could, I think, really do interesting things with it. So,
I guess I didn't even know that you, because I've met you later in this process, I didn't know that it began as you were using the materials for visual art. Because is that something that you still do?
No, and that was an interesting thing that happened is, you know, I really consider the library to be my art project. I also consider it to be a library. But I, you know, what happened is I sort of stopped making images when I started making the library, and it wasn't a deliberate decision. It was sort of an organic process. Suddenly realized, like, oh, wow, I'm not really doing that anymore. But in doing the library, I also felt totally, like, all my art-making instincts were sort of being fulfilled. So it just, you know, it just was like, oh, this is what I'm doing now. I imagine at some point I'll make images again, you know, and when I do, I'll have a really good resource to draw upon.
So, let's see. Yeah, so you eventually build up the collection, and then you got the space, which is over in the Gowanus in, what's the name of the...
Right, it's in a space called Proteus Gowanus.
That's right.
Right next to the Gowanus Canal. And, yeah, I think that was fortunate because, really, at the time, in 2005, I guess, or maybe early 2006, I was really trying to figure out how I was going to move this collection out of my apartment and into a place that was... more accessible, and I came across Proteus Gowanus, and it seemed like a really interesting space to me because it was displaying art and books and artifacts and objects and not really making any sort of like explicit statement about hierarchy between those things. It was in a sense just sort of presenting them and saying, like, these are all things that we make, and we can learn something about ourselves by looking at them and having them sort of in conversation with each other. And I mean, there was something that resonated with me, and I literally just sent them an email saying, I'd love to get together just to kind of pick your brain about how you started this. And that led to a few conversations with Sasha Chavchavadze, who started it, who got super interested in the idea of libraries and wanted to do a show programmed about artists using libraries and asked me if I would co-curate it and if I would bring the library. It was really this, like, I was kind of blown away. I was like, yeah, this is great. And so once the library was there, I think we realized that we got along well. The projects were really, like, you know, they worked well together. And she basically offered to rent me space in the complex. And Proteus has, like, you know, it has these kind of projects in residence. So there's that all sort of evolve out of shows that they've put on. So Proteus, like, I actually always describe it like Los Angeles. It's like L.A., you know, it's like this thing that has a bunch of other things inside it, and you don't ever quite know if you're in L.A. or you're in something else. You're just in that. It's that's kind of like Proteus Gwanath. I mean, it's much smaller than Los Angeles, but, you know, it's like where one thing ends and one thing starts is sometimes a little confusing.
Yeah, yeah, but it's kind of appealing, and I can see why that type of space might attract you to be connected to that, in that I guess I was just thinking that you're able to employ strategies related to libraries and strategies related to art projects in regards to, like, how you shape your project and how you think about it. And you can, but it's like, it's in like a liminal space, right? It's like,
yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons why I think it works well there. It brings a lot of different types of people to it. And to me, that's important. You know, if it was just in, like, say, a gallery setting or a setting that was sort of explicitly like an art setting, I feel like there would be, like, a huge group of people that might not be exposed to it. And, you know, it's been really interesting to see people that I obviously, like, when I started it, I thought, well, visual artists are going to be the sort of primary users of this. And actually, I didn't really think that there would be other people. But, you know, like, this received a lot of interest from writers, you know, historians. I think that there are, I just think that there are a lot of different angles into it. And so being in that space, being at Proteus, has allowed it to have exposure to, you know, maybe a broader sort of set of types of people.
Do you have regulars? Like, do you have people that come use your computers to, like, look at porn, like the regular library does?
You know, it's funny. I
should come do that.
You should come look at porn there tomorrow. Yeah, I can totally hook you up. I don't actually, as far as I know, I mean, here's one thing is I'm not always at the library when it's open, so it's totally possible that there are, like, creepy porn users there, but I haven't encountered them so much. It is funny, though, because, like, I put my cell phone number online recently, like a year ago, you know, just because it was like, that's the number to the library, too. And so I do get these calls occasionally from people who are, you know, really are like, I want to come in and do, like, research for, like, I'm trying to get a job or whatever. And, you know, sure, you can come in. I mean, it's not the primary reason for, you know, the library's existence, but I'm
certainly
not going to tell.
Yeah, but
you have
some free resources there, right?
Yeah, totally. Yes, there's scanning stations set up. So there's three scanners. There's a photocopier. All of which are free. I mean, I have a, you know, little donation box, so if you feel so inclined, and people do, they'll leave some money. And yeah, two computers that do have, you know, internet access. So for sure, I mean, the whole premise, and you know, I mean, it is like, people always ask, well, how do you fund this? How does this, like, how is it sustaining? And I guess it's, you know, in some ways unsustainable because it generates no income. For one, the collection's incredibly cheap to build. I get a lot of donations, and even when I'm not getting donations, I'm generally sourcing things at, you know, thrift stores, library book sales. I haven't done the average, but I can't imagine it's more than, you know, a dollar. It's probably less than a dollar per book. So that's really quite cheap.
I paid like $6 for a book that I got that I donated to you.
Yeah, and then I got it for free.
Oh, right, that's true.
See, well, how that's that cool. Works?
I'll write it.
And
off.
I really appreciate it.
Touche, my friend. Yeah, it's like low overhead.
It's low overhead. My biggest expense is rent, and even that is, you know, like relatively cheap by New York standards. So
I know in the beginning, like I remember when you got the space, you had like, did you have like an open call? I'll go back to what I was originally going to say. In the beginning, it seemed like you were more actively seeking out visual artists to come and like even put on a show and like sort of encouraging people to use it.
Yeah.
But at least in my perception, more recently, you've sort of expanded into less of that and more of just like, there's like the word processor writing
right.
series. There's
yeah.
these branch libraries that you've been opening.
Yeah.
Have you been doing as much of like the sort of pushing the art material on artists, or are you?
Well,
like
you know, I mean, the big problem that I ran into early on was that I just don't really have space to exhibit the work. So of course, I encourage people and want people to come and use it, and that's, you know, one of the original sort of an intended purposes of the library. But I don't. Branch libraries actually started in a way as a way for me to have a place to exhibit library generated artworks. I've been, I think, incredibly fortunate in that I've been able to work with a lot of great institutions, and a lot of them have approached me saying we would like to set up a branch. And to me, that's great, because most of those places are set up to show work, and so that seems to me like, I feel like that's the primary outlet right now for exhibiting library-generated work. I just don't, you know, I don't have the physical space. But
sure.
I think that word processor also like has been something that I've been able to like more, you know, actively sort of pursue and invite writers to come in and work with the material. It would be great, you know. I'm always sort of thinking of like ways to further branch out, you know, the library's activities. And so, for instance, I've been thinking about like online work, like online artwork or work that could exist in that space rather than a library or a physical gallery or library space. And so that's something that I'm, you know, maybe somewhat analogous to word processor, having like kind of an online project that happens with some frequency.
I think it's a good strategy, the branches. I mean, just to be more explicit about it, because probably some people aren't familiar. But again, it's like you will send some of the books and like maybe some of the...
Actually, I never send books. I always source them in that.
Oh,
area.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah. And actually...
Do you set up like a copy station necessarily?
Yeah, it's always... It's branches. Basically, what I want them to do is serve the purpose of showing work, and then like the space in Brooklyn, like allowing people to come and use the books as well.
Right.
So, you know, it's whatever I happen to find in that area. So actually there's one opening tomorrow at Franklin Street Works in Stamford, Connecticut, you know, and actually I think that has maybe 40 books, and that was, I just found it more difficult in some ways to find books there. It's like the one that was just in Joshua Tree that's moving to Los Angeles. Later on in the month, I think we had almost 100 books in Joshua Tree. Those will all move to LA, and I think, you know, we'll have more. So that will probably be, what, 120, 130 books. So, you know, there's part of it is just like I don't know what the branch is going to look like until I get there. And that's also true of the work that I show, because I like to work with local populations, and I'm often working with someone who lives in that city.
Yeah, I was curious if you had any like regional observations or reactions to your project.
Well, you know, I was very interested to see if there were regional differences in terms of the kinds of material that I was coming across. Because a lot of the kind of like subject matter that I end up collecting tends to be maybe sort of more universal in scope. You know, the sciences aren't going to vary all that much from Providence to LA. But then there are certain things, like in Southern California, I've found a lot of, or it was sort of heavy on, you know, military industrial complex,
sure.
aerospace stuff,
yeah.
film stuff, New Age stuff.
I was going to say New Age, I bet. Yeah,
yeah, some really amazing New Age stuff. So, and then, I mean, in terms of the receptivity to the project, it's hard for me to totally gauge. I am, you know, usually only in this in the place ahead of time to set up and like help get the, you know, I'm usually there through the opening and then I'm gone. So what I rely on is reports from the people at the space. But from what I can tell, they seem to be well received. Like people come and spend hours with books and
cool.
sit around and do cool things with them.
Sweet.
So yeah.
This is kind of a nuts and bolts strategies kind of question. I was thinking recently, so you also have played music for a long time and
yeah.
have a big interest in music.
Yeah.
And, I mean, did you ever collect records in a...
You mean, was I like a record collector?
I just mean as someone
fan.
That's probably
yeah.
familiar with
yeah.
collecting records, you're
yeah.
familiar with the process of like... digging through stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking,
right.
I've been thinking about, you know, people talk about digging for records a lot, searching for records. But one thing that people don't talk about so much is sort of like, well, what are you actually doing? Like when you pick up a record, what do you feel for? What do you
yeah.
look for?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
where do you look?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I look for the names of producers.
Right.
Because I know that the producer is an important part of
right.
like,
the... Right. So, like, what are the cues?
Right. And so I guess I'm curious, yeah, about that with the thrifting for books.
Yeah.
Like, do you have some things like, I don't know, techniques, styles?
Yeah. I mean,
hot tips?
I think I've got, I think I've gotten quite
cool
good
publishers
at it.
That you, like, look out for and
stuff? Well, you know... I tend not to be a completist. I've been a completist actually only in the time, the Life Nature series and the Time Life Science series.
Are you still looking for some of those?
I have them all. I just
oh, he's got them all. So
I just got Giant Molecules actually, which is at the it will be at the LA branch.
Congratulations!
Yeah, thanks. I was so psyched that one of the like you know 20 books in the series. It's like. You know, the body, the mind, earth, giant molecules. Like, where does that come from? you know, why don't tiny molecules get
well,
their
now
own
you
book?
Can start on the backup copy.
Yeah, totally.
The backup set.
But, you know, I think what I end up looking for, my cues are going to be titles, subject matter. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of subjects that just, like, obviously, like, aren't going to have visual images. I don't collect fiction, so immediately there are certain things, you know, it's like if you see a book that's like, you know, Poisonous Snakes of the World or whatever, that's immediately I'm going to pick that up and take a look at that, you know. I'm interested in printing processes, techniques. I'm interested in, so it's like there's lots of books out there with visual material, like even discarded books, even from the time period that I tend to collect in, which is like the 40s to the 70s, that aren't going to make the cut, you know. Either there's not enough visual material in there, it's not particularly interesting. You know, I'll look always at a like standard biology textbook, but I don't need, you know, 50 of them. You see them all the time, but some of them are truly outstanding, you know. People are doing weird things, or the illustrator was really good or ambitious or strange, or, you know, there's always, I think, some kind of element of you know, the decision whether or not to actually go ahead and purchase the book is like completely subjective. But usually there's going to be some element of something that, like, I find slightly idiosyncratic or strange or
what
weird.
I mean, have you found yourself going down? Well, you also created, I mean, with your sort of librarian training to help you, you have created a new cataloging system under which these books are organized on the shelf in the library and sort of classified.
Well, no, I use Library of Congress classification.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
In fact, I didn't. I totally just used that pre-existing system because I think it functions well enough, you know?
Right. You just designed your own online catalog.
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. I built the database, which, you know, really did... like it derives a lot of the fields from like standard bibliographic records, but then there are certain records, there are certain fields that don't get cataloged that you know that wouldn't in standard systems that I've added. I've gotten interested in like cataloging dedications lately, you know, inscriptions, provenance. Like, there's something interesting to me about the, you know, it's like the physical book is like a book. It's obviously a multiple as well, right? I mean, it's like been mass produced, but that particular book, when someone's written their name in it, like, you know, it has suddenly, it, like, it sort of explicitly that history is uncovered. And that's, to me, kind of an interesting thing about analog print culture. You know, you can see those traces.
I think one thing for the times that I have been over to the library, and like, I guess I brought up the catalog because it's funny, you start browsing through and like the way that the subjects move from sort of like, it's very mystical. It has this really weird, I mean, it brings you back to your youth, like if you spent time in the library and sort of seeing how the subjects would change.
Yeah.
And it's very poetic, you know, the way the titles like are similar, but they're sort of morphing, and
right,
and the way it sort of expands and contracts, like the field of sort of like human vision.
Right,
you
and
know
it's
what I
mean? Funny because there are like, because you know I'm it's so guided by visual material, you know, like I said, there are these like, there are just like a lot of subjects that aren't represented, so you can get these kind of like, you know, slightly jarring like abrupt shifts from like one book to the next, and it's like, well, why are these two books next to each other? And it's because, like, you know, three classes of like knowledge like aren't going to be in the library and just aren't there, so these things end up butting up against each other in weird ways.
It's always refreshing, I think, this day and age to be somewhere where you're like browsing.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a like interesting question, and I mean, I'm not a Luddite by any means, and I love like the internet and spend a lot of time on it, and I you know, I think that there's some kind of quasi browsing experience that you can have, certainly in terms of like serendipity, but it also tends to be a little bit more like self-directed, you know, like you're clicking on hyperlinks, like you can go down those like K-holes of like, you know, 2 hours later, you're like, whoa, like, why am I looking at, you know, pictures of like fetal guinea pigs?
Right.
Whereas I think, you know, I haven't quite experienced that, the kind of like real surprise that you can experience in an analog situation of like, you turn around and like, there's like, you know, I think that's always interesting in library stacks where you have, you know, the books are shifting in relation to one another based on, you know, things being discarded and added to the collection. And so, you know, you can be standing in front of one subject area and turn around and like you're suddenly like in a totally different place. But like, you know, you might end up, it might end up taking you somewhere interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that juxtaposition is the best.
It's pretty great.
I joined a video store recently.
Oh, yeah.
And it was
another
like,
really good example.
It's so
totally.
Good. It's so yeah. good for that. It's yeah. just, it's a part of the brain that I feel like I hadn't felt that brain muscle get used in a while.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
totally.
It's like really been refreshing.
Yeah, and I think there is something that you just like, I mean, I spend so much time staring at screens, and I think there's just a qualitatively different experience of, you know, like not being in front of a screen, like standing in front of like these, like this material, you know, these material objects.
Can we do like a Mystery Science Theater style thing for like a few minutes?
Sure.
Where we just like, you can tell me a little bit about some of these images.
I mean, I could, a lot of these images, you know, the funny thing about the image archive, so this is all stuff when we catalog at the library, we scan a selection of images from each book, so to attach to the catalog record, so you get some information about some of the visual information about, you know, the book as well. And I've had interns doing that actually since, you know, since Kate was my first intern in 2006. And I basically just give them control over it. I just say, you guys should, you know, I give them some guidelines, but otherwise I say, you know, this is sort of what I'm looking for, and they go ahead and scan things. So I don't always know. I mean, obviously, like, and because, you know, pulling these things out of context, like, these are mushrooms, I can tell you that. you know, pulling these things out of context, I think of that's like immediately they become that much stranger. I mean,
oh, yeah.
A lot of these images, I think, are sort of strange in their context, even if you know what you're looking at. But, you know, you remove the kind of the contextual information and, you know, quite often. In fact, because I started cataloging images as well, and I'm able to have other people do that, sort of, you know, just set up an account through the website, so I can have people doing that all over the world, theoretically.
Oh, really? So, like, will the people at Branches scan the...
Well, I have, like, this whole naming convention, and I don't want to make people... But I do have people like, I have someone in Chicago cataloging, and someone in Australia cataloging images.
Should I say, if anyone out there is interested in an internship...
Oh, yeah.
Can you get course credit?
You can. Yeah, we've had people getting course credit before. So, what was I saying?
I thought that you didn't collect too much photographic stuff.
No, I'm not. I'm pretty wide open in terms of the types of graphic material that I'm after. I've always had photos. They've always been included because you get things like that.
Yeah. I'm not just. I just had the wrong
and
idea.
That.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is it Japanese cooking? Look how grisly that guy is. Like,
I don't know.
Dude.
There's like a certain amateurishness that I really like appreciate in some of these
I
books.
Was going to ask, like, that's one thing in terms of looking, or all the time I spent looking for records.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one thing that I definitely always look for, are like short run or small release or like amateur.
Yeah, well, you know, I think things have become so professionalized that, you know, you wouldn't come across a lot of these things anymore. And I like it when it looks like someone was like, well, you know what? Like, I'm not a bad illustrator. I could definitely, you know, or like, you know.
I got this.
Yeah, or like,
I got this.
You know, this buddy of mine, like.
I just have to try, like, really hard.
Yeah. You know, I have a book called Make Your Own Horse Clothing that has like actual like stick figures in it. You know, it's like like someone was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to publish this book, and then we're just going to like totally pull back on the visual. Like, we're just like, you know, we're just not going to go all the way.
Oh my God. Do you have a lot of instructional books?
Uh-huh.
That'd be cool. You could do a project of like doing projects from the instructions.
Yeah, totally.
That'd be kind of neat.
Totally. I mean, I think that, again, like, that's pretty nice.
There's a lot of, like, body and health stuff. I mean, certainly with, like, the science and biology.
Yeah.
And sort of the idea of information that's perhaps, like, outdated.
Yeah. There are certain subjects that come up again and again in the same way that certain subjects are not represented. There are certain subjects that are... you know, represented more frequently. And again, like, you know, I'm always interested in sort of continuing to pursue collecting in those subject areas, but I always really love it when I come across something that's, you know, highly specialized or something that hasn't already been represented in the collection. You know, I have a book called Freeze Drawing Biological Specimens, which is it's really great because, well, it's the only book that I have on there aren't very many books on freeze drawing biological specimens, but, you know, like, it's a sort of esoteric
that's nice.
It's kind of a manual. It's a lab manual on how to do that. You know, and the point being that, like, taxidermy destroys the whole internal structure of any animal that it's representing. It's just, like, a surface representation. So if you need everything... But, you know, in the back, there's, like, these, like, instructions. It's, like,
cool.
How to freeze-dry, you know, like, a moose calf. But then it's also, like, how to freeze-dry a human arm. It's totally creepy.
It's knowing that there's like a place for these kinds of books to go. Because as someone that has worked with like collaging and visual material,
yeah.
I don't mean this in like a in an insulting way, but like the idea of this project in to me is like low hanging fruit in like a really positive sense.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, yes, this is a great idea. That's like we've all, or many people like in the arts or in this way have like experienced, and it's cool for me just having known about this project. Like, I look now for stuff that, because normally, yeah, maybe you enjoy it for like a few seconds. You pick it up at a thrift store. You're like, oh, that's weird.
Right.
And
thank
God
think
you're hanging on to them. For
well,
me.
And I think it's funny because I've actually
get to live at your house.
Right. Exactly. And no, I mean, believe me, I've had like a number of people come to me and say, I've got these books for you. You know, I've been holding on to them for so long. I can't hold on to them anymore, but I can't get rid of them. And I'm so, so happy.
That's cool.
There's a it's great. It's great. Because I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I mean, of course, like, I'm selective about what I take. So I'm not everything's going to make it in.
You say, yeah, cool. And you just put it right on the curb.
Totally. I'm like, that's sweet, dude. Thanks. That's awesome. Oh, 20 years of National Geographic. That is so perfect.
I mean, I stole a skiing instructional book out of a vacation home because I was like, no one's looking at this.
Right.
This is amazing.
Right. Yes. But I also think that a lot of artists, you know, work this way. They have their own source material that they, you know, and it may not even be like, and often it's not going to be like so direct as like collage material, but, you know, just like visual material, like people get interested in certain shapes or certain ideas. And so they collect. And so in a sense, this is just like a public artist's, you know, visual kind of research collection.
Cool.
But yeah, no, your point about low-hanging fruit, I think, is right. I mean, like, that was the thing is I was like, oh, my God, like, look at all that. Like, this
yeah.
stuff is out there. It's not like there's, you know, they're not rare books. I'm not, you know, like, it's not that kind of collecting. It's like,
are those
this
people
is
getting saved? Were they like?
That's from an amazing book called Understanding Human Behavior. It's,
oh, yeah.
Do you know that?
Yes.
It's actually a series.
Yeah, someone else I know was
unbelievable.
Yeah, had some copies of that, and then
really
I had
incredible.
Never heard of it again until you brought it up, and I was like, oh, I do know that.
Yeah, no, that's just like, that is a total.
What's the story of that? Have you looked up those books at all?
I haven't done a ton of look at Kiss.
Hey guys,
what's up?
Thanks freely.
I don't know that other than my own. I haven't done like, you know, research on the books themselves, but it certainly fits in with that kind of like 70s like self-actualization, slightly quasi. It's like presented in this like quasi progressive way, but it's like total like patriarchy. It's like, you know, it's just like brutally sexist in,
wow.
in these ways that, you know, but it thinks that it's like incredibly progressive and forward thinking.
You haven't had anybody like hit you up like, I made that book back in the 80s and like I found it on your website?
You know, no one's ever told me that. No one's ever come to me and said, take something down or, I would have actually, you know, so the, like a number of years ago, the Times did this little like piece about Proteus Guanis in the library, and they did, some images from the image archive. They posted them online, and, the reporter who was working on it was saying like, you know, do you own copyright? Can you? And I was
like,
were
you listening to me when you were interviewing me?
Well, he was just kind of like, look, you know, this is like, we have to go through this. Like, can you tell me that you're going to be, you know? And he was like, I'll do my due diligence. And he went through and like actually contacted like a bunch of, you know, people and ended up like, I would get these like texts from him being like, you know, the whale woman's living in Papua New Guinea and has like a 30-year-old husband. They're like, it's like he totally got into like,
cool.
you know, figuring it out, which was kind of awesome.
That's cool. I mean, I suppose that's another thing it could be used for would be a weird story leads. You
sure.
know? Come in there, find a cool book. You want to hunt down this person?
Yeah, no, totally.
Figure out what's going on.
Absolutely.
With
them.
Yeah. So, what's coming up next? Like, where can we see the reanimation library out in the world?
So, like I said, Franklin Street Works in Stamford, Connecticut. That branch opens tomorrow. It's part of a group show called Strange Invitation. that runs until, I think, mid-June. Franklin Street Works is doing really great projects up there. And it's pretty easy to get to, you know, it's an hour from Grand Central, so I think it's worth the trip.
Yeah, and if you're in Connecticut, if you're in Stanford,
then you, like,
you New York-centric jerk.
I know. Yeah, I'm a total jerk. And if you're, yeah, I'm such an asshole.
Why did you invite me? We're in New York right now, it's, I understand. I understand. I came all the way here to talk into a camera on the internet, so.
You got a lot of problems, Bennett.
Really?
Can we talk about those?
I guess. God, I was just wrapping up, but I guess we got plenty of time.
And then L.A. At Monta Vista Projects in Highland Park.
Highland Park?
That is opening on the 21st.
I'll be there.
And on the 18th at Machine Project, we'll be doing actually a word processor launch, and I'm going to do a little talk about the library. Then there's been a series at the Drawing Center called Drafts. Phase one and phase two have already happened. The next one is happening in early May. I cannot remember the exact date, but if you go to the Drawing Center site, you can see it there. And then this fall, I'm doing a branch in Mexico City.
Oh, cool.
So things are...
Where's that one? Do you know where?
Are you going to force me to...
Do you know where? No, I don't know. I've been to Mexico City one time. So if you were like, that place that you went, Bennett, I'd be like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah,
it's that place that you went.
Oh, the, like, Museum of, like, Images or whatever? El Museo del Imagen?
Right. It's called Arte Tal Cual.
Okay. Shout out to mi gente.
Yeah, if I'm saying you better brush up, son.
You're about to go to Mexico City.
I know. I was talking to one of my contacts down there, and I was saying I'm a little freaked out because I have to go down there and like find all the books. And I was like, and I don't speak Spanish. And she was like, don't worry, everyone speaks English here. I was like,
Will this be your first time doing it internationally?
No, I did one in London a couple years ago.
Well, non-English, I feel like that might be an interesting, because you won't necessarily know all the titles.
Right. Well, I mean, immediately it makes it that much more difficult, right?
Sweet.
I mean, so, there's a lot of projects happening and, you know, the library is moving along.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on Fat Public Access. I mean, shout out the website and the Twitter and stuff.
Okay, reanimationlibrary.org is the website. The entire catalog's online, the image archive, so you can check that out. At reanimationlib is the Twitter handle.
Andrew already explained that his cell phone number is on the Reanimation Library
That's
website.
That's correct.
So definitely hit him up.
Yeah, I would like, if you can call with like a block number and leave like heavy breathing, that's kind of my preferable.
He's got
deal.
A kid.
I've got a kid, it's true. That's the sort of thing that makes me feel.
Sorry.
But yeah, thank you, Bennett.
And cool, man. Happy to host.
I've always wanted to be on Public Access, and so I feel like one of my dreams is being realized.
We can do that for you.
Yeah, it's awesome.
We can do that for you.
It's awesome.
Well, thanks everyone for watching Fat Public Access. I know I said this was going to be the last thing, but I forgot that like we're probably going to show YouTube videos and shoot the shit. Jamie Dubs says there's mad people coming out.
Yes.
So we're going to keep the bullshit going for a little later this evening. So feel free to stay tuned. Otherwise, get at us on the internet and go look at some images online. Cool. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Thank you.
All right.